You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
We're underway. Hello, John McWhorter. Glenn Lowry here at bloggingheads.tv. How are you doing?
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
I'm getting by on a tough day, John. We are talking just hours after horrible events, the shooting deaths of two African-American men at the hands of white police officers in Baton
Within
Rouge.
Within 48 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and also in suburban St. Paul, Minnesota. Videotapes, anguished words from the girlfriend of the fellow in, I'm sorry, I forget his name.
His name is
in Minnesota.
Oh, God, I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, we can... I forget
his name. I could look it up right now.
First
but
name
anyway.
is his nickname is Phil. I know that much. But there's
it's an unusual name.
I don't remember the last name. God, that's awful. We're going to have to remember these names. And then there's Anton Sterling, who is the young man who was tackled by two police officers and then shot on video in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
The gentleman's name was Philando Castile.
Philando Castile, indeed. Phil Castile and Anton Sterling, names that we'll be hearing a good deal more of. To outraged expressions of fury and despair and concern, and that provoked rallies across the country in American cities, New York City being one of them, Dallas, Texas being another, and then, John, literally just hours ago, we heard that a sniper, maybe with accomplices, had attacked police officers in Dallas, killing five of them, if I'm not mistaken, wounding seven more and wounding two civilians, creating havoc on that scene. He was ultimately himself taken out by police counteractions. Other accomplices or alleged accomplices are in custody. Everyone has been talking about this outbreak of violence, outbreak of racial violence, and we're here to chew this over a bit. And I might just say before I give you a chance to speak that I don't quite know what to say. I mean, I know that whatever anyone says, anyone with a public platform such as we have, is consequential. It contributes to the general tenor of the discussion of these issues. One wants to be responsible. One wants not to descend into a kind of partisan finger-pointing. One wants to be mindful of the fact that all the evidence about all of these cases that I've mentioned is not yet in, and more is undoubtedly going to be learned in the days ahead. And one is aware of the fact that, you know, people are taking sides, and if you say anything critical about anything, you will appear to have been on one side or the other. And that is, at least for me, I don't know about you, something that gives me pause, that makes me feel cautious and guarded. I mean, there are thoughts in my head that I don't know if I can say them. I don't know if I should say them. I don't know if they're right. Anyway, I don't know. What do you have to say for yourself here?
Well, I am disinclined to believe that the answer to all of this is that there is not a racial element involved.
You're saying you don't believe that there's not a racial element.
Right. I think that...
Which means there is a racial element.
Yeah, these men's being black does have something to do with this. I do believe that these cops are often doing things which they would be less inclined to do if dealing with a white equivalent exhibiting the same behavior. And if that weren't true, I would be one of the first people to be taking my lumps by saying so. But I don't know, Glenn. I am unaware of anybody on any side of the spectrum who has presented a very simple list of white, lower-class men who have been not just harassed, I've seen those lists, but killed in their cars, running away, these same things, in this same way. It simply isn't true that there's a narrative along the lines of what's going on with these black men that's going on with white men, too, that the media somehow suppresses or that we're being asked not to pay attention to. Because if that were the case, especially with the media the way it is now, we'd know. And so this is something that happens to black people more. And I think it is thoroughly reasonable to suppose that color has to do with these split-second decisions. Now, no, the police are not running around trying to off black men. It's not a war on black men. But there's a racial element here. And the way I think of the cops is, and I've said this since I wrote my Losing the Race, the extent to which racism matters in this country, I think, is vastly exaggerated. The issue is not whether it exists. It's whether it matters. And I think that we are religiously trained to pretend that it matters more than it does. And that leads to the sorts of things you and I don't like, such as the over-concern with things like microaggression, cultural appropriation, the N-word. On all of that, you and I are in agreement. But I've always said that the problem with the cops is like a house has burned down, but the chimney is left. That's the one thing where I do see what everybody means. And I think that it stands in the way of us ever getting past race in this country. Because when a black person who is not like you or me says that racism is what America is all about, they don't mean microaggressions or cultural appropriation. What they really mean is the cops. That's the first thing they're going to start talking about. I've seen that a numbing number of times. That's what this is. And for this, now, it's just chance that two of these events happen to happen within the same week. But they illustrate a real problem. Now, Mike Brown, yes. Oddly enough, that's now probably the best-known case after Trayvon Martin. That did not go down the way we were told. It's quite clear. It's at the point where those who say that it did are basically, as John Ford sometimes did, printing the legend rather than the truth. But with Alton Sterling and with Phil, what's his last name again?
Castile.
Phil Castile. I don't think it's likely that when we learn the details, we're going to exonerate those officers. I don't think there's anything that either one of those men could have been doing that would have justified their being
Grant that what you propose there is true, that there's no justification in either of those cases. I don't think we know that, but you speculate that it's so, and let me grant that for the sake of argument. What has their being black got to do with it? I mean, and I don't mean that to be some kind of silly question. I know that race matters in American society. I mean, what in those specific cases leads you, I'm talking about in those cases, not in the generic atmosphere, to think that the officers are racially motivated? The officers happen to have been white, and those guys happen to have been black. Mm-hmm. You're basically saying what the governor of Minnesota said, which is that Philando Castile would be alive if he had been white. Mm-hmm. And I want to know how you and the governor of Minnesota know that.
Very simply. Of course, there's some muddy areas here. And not racially motivated, because the word motivated implies that these cops are actually actively seeking to do. Where all these things are things that happen in the moment.
Just the counterfactual. If the guy had been white, it wouldn't have happened. Yeah. How do you know that?
Where's the list of white men that this has happened to? Where's the list? Somebody would have pulled one out by now, probably a right-wing person, maybe not. Where is the list of cases like this where a white guy is sitting in his car and is asked to put his hands up, and instead he reaches down into his back pocket and he gets shot? Do white people not reach into their pockets occasionally rather than put their hands up? That's the evidence. It's as simple as that. And nobody has presented the list, which I think is a case of negative evidence being conclusive in this case. It would be so useful, wouldn't it?
You There's are no aware, way. Are you not, that amongst all persons in the United States killed by police, twice as many, or roughly twice as many whites as blacks have been victimized?
But where's the list?
So you're supposing, and I'm not disputing it, I simply don't know. I want to know how you know. Mm-hmm. You're proposing that in those cases where those many whites, I mean, not the same rate, blacks at a higher rate per person in the population, but in the absolute numbers, there are twice as many, roughly, whites who are killed by police in a given year than blacks. Mm-hmm. So you're proposing in all of those cases where the whites are killed, none of those are provocative and disturbing in the same way. And while I don't have a list, you've asked for a list, I don't have a list, I haven't looked for it, I don't know if that's true. Let me give you a counter-argument. My counter-argument would be, and it's a combination of things, among which race would be one, class would be another.
Yeah.
The local circumstances, that is, the kinds of neighborhood or the nature of the, you know, the climate of crime and disorder, or whatever, that might condition a police officer's fears, might be another. The nature of the encounters that happen between people, I don't know if there's a difference by race in the character of those encounters, might be another, a combination of things. I say that to say, I have two sons. I have three sons, actually, one of them in their 40s. I have two young sons who are in their 20s. One lives in San Francisco. The other lives in suburban Boston. They're both black. I somehow don't think, and forgive me, perhaps I'm being naive, that they're at the same risk as would be somebody who lived in a high crime district in inner city Boston, where there was gang activity, where there was a lot of, you know, dicey kind of activity going on late at night and such like that. And they're driving around at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning with a broken taillight and they get pulled over. That circumstance strikes me as one that's much more fraught with risk.
Mm-hmm.
Race might factor into it, but it wouldn't be the only thing than the circumstances in which my sons would normally find themselves. And so while I'm black and while I'm aware of what's going on in America, I wonder if I want to have a simple racialization of these circumstances. And I wonder, too, and we could look into this, whether or not whites of modest working class, lower income, living in drug-troubled districts of whatever town or city they might be living in, where police have encounters that sometimes turn violent. I know this has to happen.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're, you know, immune to this kind of police violence. So I'm reluctant to endorse the position that you just take, although I'm prepared to credit that it's not implausible.
Well, it depends on what we mean by racialization. And I can come closer to you in saying this. One thing that we know, we're not supposed to say it, but we know, is it's already happening. Black boys in big cities all over the United States killing each other over nothing. You can read about this sort of thing happening here in New York day after day. I don't even have to look to see what color the people are. And the simple fact is, there are no agglomerations of white boys doing this. Or at least, if there are, it's very few, it's very local. And the reason you know is because you never hear about it, and there's no reason the media would suppress it. It's black boys who are doing that. Now, I'm saying that to say that these cops are clearly extremely afraid of a black man shooting them. Most of these incidents involve a cop who's nervous that somebody reaches somewhere and they're going to pull out a gun. And no, they're not getting that from nowhere. It could be called racialized that the black man sitting in the front seat who reaches to get his wallet is seen as possibly reaching for a gun, where the white man would be less likely to be mistaken in that way because the cops encounter so many fewer gangs of white men with guns shooting each other. Now, is it racism that means that there are more of these black teenagers doing this than white teenagers? We've talked about that. If you're going to say that's because of racism, it's so abstract that it's hard to make any really coherent case. Is a cop racist to be more afraid of a black boy with a gun than a white boy with a gun when he meets so many black boys with guns and so very many fewer white boys with guns? That's a tough one. Nevertheless, it does mean that at the moment of these encounters, the person's color matters. Now, what I'm seeing from my Facebook friends, etc., makes it seem as if this fear of black men has no logical basis whatsoever, and we're just talking about prejudice out of Gone with the Wind. Obviously, it's not that simple. But I do believe that Philando Castile would be more likely to be alive if his name was Jesse Pinkett. I'm making up a white name. I really do. Now,
here's,
does that make a cop
think,
a bigot? I don't know.
I think your position, which is very widely held, is reasonable. Okay, the position that racial, let's call it implicit bias, that's the phrase of art these days, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You see the race of a person, you have to make a split-second judgment and decision, and you make that decision somewhat differently, even if unaware of it yourself, based on the racial identity of the person. I don't think that's crazy. I think that's real. There's plenty of evidence in the experimental social psychology literatures to support that. People have done all kinds of observations and experiments finding evidence of this kind of bias. Even blacks can be subject to this kind of bias in encountering other black people and so on. The question is whether or not when events like this happen, someone gets killed by a police officer, this is a very serious matter. someone has, there's a volunteer community watch person, call him George Zimmerman. And there's a young man who's black. They end up in an altercation and he gets shot. There is a dispute between a young man, call him Michael Brown, and a police officer on the streets of Ferguson. They get into a conflict. The kid ends up dead. These things that draw thousands of people into the streets in cities across the country that become fodder for a narrative that can engender a movement that cause people to become very angry. Perhaps so angry that some of them, nutty, evil, go out and take the lives of white police officers purely because they're white and they're police officers, which is what seems to have happened in Dallas, Texas. When we're dealing with matters like that, plausible speculations about motive that involve race and that heighten the intensity of conflict and feed and fuel an atmosphere of fear, of anger, of hatred, and so on, we should be slow, not quick, to reach for such formulations, albeit plausible formulations. We should try to tamp that down rather than fire it up. If Jesse Jackson goes on national television and says that a young man was the victim of a legal lynching, this is the young man Anton Sterling in Baton Rouge, and I saw, as everyone has seen, you know, the cell phone video of what is an awful event, and it doesn't look like it could possibly have been justified. I don't know the facts. I wasn't there. I didn't see everything before and after and so forth. There will be an inquest and an investigation. We will learn more. But it didn't look very good for the cops at all. They seem to have been behaving very badly. But to call such a thing a legal lynching, okay, and to repair to this idea that here we go once again, we're in the 21st century, but not that much has changed. They used to hang black people from trees. Now cops gun them down in the street. I'm loath to go there, John. I don't think that's a responsible way of talking about these circumstances. And I know I'll get myself into trouble for saying so. And I could be dead wrong. It may be proven that the cops in question had absolutely no, there's just no other side to the story. That's certainly what it looked like on the tape. It may be proven or it may be made to be plausible that their motivations were suspicious. It may be the case that that particular police force has, as the Ferguson police force did, a lot of, you know, dirt under the rug, under the carpet, which if you pull it up and look will make them look really quite bad. Or it may not be. I don't know that we know. And I think forbearance. Okay, so again, I'm going to sound naive here. I'm arguing for forbearance in the face of black bodies lying all over the place. Well, as a matter of fact, no, black bodies are not lying all over the place. I said it even though these events are happening. As a matter of fact, we know that more whites than blacks are killed by the police in the country every year and so on. So it's a country of 300 million people. There are hundreds of thousands of encounters every day between police officers and citizens. The events that quicken our attention because they become viral in our media may not be accurate representations of the actual reality. So anyway, that's my, I don't know.
Glenn,
I'm all wrong, I know.
You're too cold a logician sometimes because you're listening to that theatrical language and you're taking it as if it's meant as analysis. When, as I've said before, really, it's a kind of liturgy. And I think you need to be a little more sympathetic to somebody like Jesse Jackson, because just think of it this way. If he didn't call it a lynching, and there are all sorts of other people who have written op-eds already striking the same tone, including on the pages of the New York Times, if they didn't use that language, what else would they be? Who else would they be? Their whole identity is forged around being the person who advises America of its dastardly deeds against black people, advises America that racism is still there. That's what they do. Now, I don't mean that they're poverty pimps. I don't mean that they don't mean what they say. But it's their entire personhood to speak that language, to have that message. If they couldn't say that, if they couldn't call it lynching, if they couldn't talk about the black bodies, if they couldn't make it sound like nothing significant has happened since 1865, that would be so psychologically dislocating for them. Can you imagine suddenly not feeling like you had a purpose? So, yes, they're going to put it in those ways. And unfortunately, it can be connected, in a way, to what crazy people like these snipers in Dallas would have done. The case can be made, just as we associate Donald Trump with the nasty actions that individuals, perhaps under his sway, perform. But the people condescending me, I know, too bad. They can't help it. And they don't mean any harm. We're going to see a lot of that language.
But they may be doing harm. I'm going to accept what you say about, and Reverend Jesse Jackson is only one of many people that one could point to here. I don't know if you saw Michael Eric Dyson's piece in the New York
Times
today.
I was referring to it obliquely just now. Yes.
And so on. And, you know, if they didn't say this, what would they say? And so on. It's their shtick.
Who would they be?
It's their shtick.
Not shtick. Because that makes it sound like they're
like
they don't
they're
mean
wearing
it,
it, but this is who they are. Not
this
it's
is
not
what they do.
Yeah. But John, that's not what we need in the country at this time. I mean, look it. I don't take any pleasure in saying this, but we could be on the brink of race war in this country.
Mm-hmm.
There could be white vigilante nationalist skinhead biker groups right now plotting to do what Dylan Roof did in Charleston, South Carolina. Let me finish the work that Dylan started, they might be saying to one another. He wanted to provoke a race war. Well, by the way, did you see those cops shot down in Dallas? The race war has already started. What are we going to do, waiting for them to come to get us? You know, they could be going around planning on the next Black Lives Matter demonstration that they're going to take some of those people out. Okay, mm-hmm. Or knowing that when they get to Cleveland for the Republican National Convention, there are going to be plenty of demonstrators and they're going to be obstreperous, and that'll be a good opportunity to whatever, whatever. And there are a lot of weapons out there. This is a tinderbox that we're sitting on. It's a powder keg that we are standing in the vicinity of. And I just think we got to look for higher ground. I mean, again, I know it sounds naive. I think some of these natural reflexes and identity-driven impulses to racialize every grievance need to be stifled, even to the extent sometimes that stifling them may forego an opportunity to advance the conditions of Black people, because this is not just about Black people. This is about the country. I'll give one more example and I'll stop. I'm in enough trouble already. I might as well just say this. So, President Obama said about the Trayvon Martin killing shortly after it had happened, but before the jury had acquitted George Zimmerman, that if he had had a son, he looked like Trayvon. And he was trying to tell the country, I thought, that he understood the angst of some African-Americans, he being an African-American himself, and he knew that there was something to their complaints about the way in which Black people are treated, suspected of being criminals, racially profiled, and so on and so forth. I understand the impulse to show the empathy. But my view, my considered judgment, I've thought a lot about this, is that the president made a grievous error when he uttered those words. First, because Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman was ultimately acquitted by a jury of his peers of the actions that he undertook on that. It was found that he had acted in self-defense. Now, you can blow that off and say, oh, it was a jury, there were white people, there were Latinos, they don't, whatever, whatever, or cops are never acquitted or whatever, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But when the court finds that, you know, a defendant of our liking is acquitted, we like to accept the judgment. You know, if Hillary Clinton is found by the FBI to be innocent, everybody who's a Democrat like me is saying, thank God, thank God. But when the courts, we don't have any other way of resolving these matters other than what courts do. So, first of all, the president spoke too soon. He didn't know what was going to happen. Secondly, he's the president of the United States. He's not supposed to be a cheerleader for any particular faction or side. The high ground there, the high, high, high ground would have been to forego the impulse to explain to the country how he identified and so forth and so on, notwithstanding the fact that he did identify. I know what I'm saying is awful at some level, but I really feel this way. I think forbearance from leadership in racially charged situations such as we face now is what we need more than anything else.
Glenn, you seem to be putting yourself into a corner, though, because black community, generally, the cops are seen as the enemy. Ordinary view. It's not just the Michael Eric Tyson in the room. It's pretty much everybody. I live in Jersey City. It's the exact same way here. There was a guy who, how did it go? He got killed in front of a Walgreens. This was, I think, about a year ago. And it was widely covered in Jersey City. He killed a cop in front of a Walgreens for no apparent reason at all. And the general investigation revealed that people here in Jersey City, and not even in the only in the very worst neighborhoods, hate the cops. They're just, despite the fact that this one got killed, they had a basic sympathy. But there was a tiny bit you could detect in a lot of the interviews, a sense that, well, okay, finally they took one. You know, they got it instead of us. You're saying that the people, say, in Jersey City are wrong, that it isn't racial, that they're wrong to think that the cops are bigots. And I'm disinclined to think that, or especially I think that those people's feelings about the cops are the main thing standing between them and seeing themselves as actual Americans and joining this society, warts and all. The whole idea that America is all about racism is all about the cops. And that includes that black Jersey City residents in pretty much every neighborhood but the one I live in think of the cops as the enemy. And I know from my own experiences that the white cops here in Jersey City are really mean. I have had various experiences with them that have nothing to do with me being in danger of getting shot. But I always find myself thinking, if I were a little younger and if my voice were a little blacker, and if this were about something other than me driving too fast or me going around the corner the wrong way or something like that, I can imagine one of these men getting violent. The sneers that you get from some of these people for having done nothing wrong. You're dismissing all that, it seems. You're saying we just need to be more analytic about it. Really?
No, I'm not dismissing that. I mean, I should have said, or let me say now, policing is in deep trouble in this country, and the cover has been pulled off of practices that are very long-standing and are problematic. The police should be public servants. They need to understand themselves as basically working in cooperation with the communities to produce security and safety for people. The belligerence and the incivility and the violence of the police diminishes their effectiveness and also leaves us as a citizenry very poorly served. The police are not sufficiently well trained. They need to know how to diffuse conflict situations without resorting to tasers and weapons and batons and so on and so forth. They need sometimes to be able to walk away from conflict situations rather than trying to resolve them by physical force because it's simply not worth it. They need to be more professional. They need to be more accountable. They need to be more transparent. There's a lot of reform that needs to be done to policing. I don't dispute that for a minute. Moreover, the racial disparities between the composition of these police forces, and there are black police, but there are not so many of them, and the communities that they are policing, and the conflict-ridden and danger-infused situations in which the police and citizens often encounter each other, because after all, the police do a job that is risky. They will have reason sometimes in certain circumstances to be fearful. And that can lead to their hair trigger responses to the least provocation and so forth and so on. All of this has to be grappled with. They need to be better trained. Maybe we need to look at who are these police. I mean, I've often wondered, are returning veterans from theaters of conflict, from America's wars, overly represented in law enforcement because they, after all, have relevant training and experience and so forth? Are they victims of post-traumatic stress disorder or some other kind of psychological effects that would cause them to conduct their jobs in ways that are to the detriment of the citizenry and so forth and so on? Should we have a much higher bar for who can become a police officer? Should they meet? Maybe that means paying them more and trying to recruit people who have, you know, college and master's degrees and things like so on and so on. All of this needs to be looked at. Needs to be more than looked at, needs to be changed, needs to be addressed. But framing this matter as the new Jim Crow, as white hooded Klansmen in blue patrolling the streets and dragooning black people and carrying them away, It's a mistake, in my humble opinion. And likewise, like I said before, we can marginalize and criticize poor policing without racializing that conversation, because white people too are affected by the poor policing. And even if there's an overrepresentation, you know, the rate 2-to-1 is what I hear, much twice as likely that a black person than a white person, even though there are, since there's so many more whites than blacks, twice as many whites as blacks were actually shot. Mm-hmm. Despite that, I think that we'd be better off in the longer run if we didn't frame this as a racial conversation. As you and I'll stop because I've not been talking for a long time. As you and I, you just said it a moment ago, we do have to think about the fact that there's a fair amount of criminal activity that's going on in some of these communities of color and are being perpetrated by people who live there. I mean, I remember the one-year anniversary of the Michael Brown killing. The demonstrations in Ferguson, Missouri were marred by police being fired on, by gang factions shooting up each other, by there was an awful lot of people running to take cover in the gunfire thing and so forth and so on. We saw what happened in Dallas. So there's that. I just would not pick the worst cases, racialize them, make them into a poster, and then parade around the country talking about we need racial justice. We need better policing for all of our people. I try to keep race out of it as much as I could. And there you are. That's my story. I'm sticking with it.
Well, Glenn, I've got to go get my daughters because school is closing early today.
All right, this was a quick conversation.
We should pick this up again.
We will.
And I just want to say for myself in closing that it's these episodes that end up leading to the dialogue on race that is so frustratingly fake in so many ways. The spark of all of it is this. If these things didn't happen, we would suddenly be, I think, in a very new territory. But I think it's interesting that it's on this that you and I seem to have a certain amount of disagreement, considering where both of us would have been about 15 years ago. But we should pick this.
Yeah, let's come back to it. A short conversation, and disagreement is healthy, right? That's productive. That's how we make.
So I hear. Yep. Okay. Good.
Take care, John.
You too, Glenn.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Blogging Heads TV. You can help support this content by remembering to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to all Blogging Heads episodes or to a specific program by going to our subscribe page at bloggingheads.tv/subscribe. There you can sign up for podcast downloads via iTunes or Stitcher, or you can subscribe to our email and we'll send you an alert every time we post a new episode.